This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The High Commissioner's spokeswoman, Ravina Shamdasani, says the government suspended all cooperation with the office in October 2016 after a UN investigation released a damning report on abusive conditions in the country.
That's Lisa Schlein on the closure of the UN Human Rights Office in Burundi. Details coming up. Also, the biggest oil field in Libya has resumed production. And Sudanese officials have released a top opposition leader. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, says she deeply regrets Burundi's decision to close down the UN Human Rights Office in the country. Despite vigorous protests, she says the office was forced to close its doors on Thursday after a 23-year presence in Burundi. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet says the UN Human Rights Office has been a force for good in Burundi for more than two decades. She notes the agency has worked with the government on peace building, on reforming the country's security and justice systems, and myriad other issues. Unfortunately, she says, many of these human rights gains have been seriously jeopardized since 2015. That was when President Pierre Nkurunziza decided to run for a third term, sparking nationwide violent protests and a strong government crackdown. The High Commissioner's spokeswoman, Ravina Shamdasani, says the government suspended all cooperation with the office in October 2016 after a UN investigation released a damning report on abusive conditions in the country.
Our reports on the human rights situation in Burundi have always been developed in a constructive spirit, intended to support the promotion and protection of human rights in the country. But the High Commissioner is disappointed by Burundi's lack of cooperation in recent years with UN human rights mechanisms, which even went so far as to include threats to prosecute members of the Independent International Commission of Inquiry.
Over the past 2 years, Shamdasani says the UN human rights staff has been severely hampered in its ability to look into allegations of violations. Nevertheless, she says her office has continued to receive allegations of human rights abuses. She says the office has received very credible reports of killings, forced disappearances, arbitrary arrests and detentions, threats and restrictions on the freedom of expression and movement. Despite the closure of the office, she says UN staff will continue to monitor the situation in Burundi by various means to shed light on human rights concerns and to lend support to those in need of protection. She says High Commissioner Bachelet stands ready to engage constructively with Burundi. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The biggest oil field in Libya has resumed production after months of inactivity, adding to world oil supplies and contributing to the drop of prices. The El Sarara oil field is in the southwestern part of the country. Local oil security forces retook it from a militia group that blocked oil deliveries. The lost production is believed to have cost Libya $1.8 billion. On December, local forces seized the oil fields. Then in February, forces loyal to Eastern militia leader Khalifa Haftar took over the oil fields and continued the blockade. Libya's national oil company now says site security has been restored and production resumed late Monday. The oil field is believed to be able to produce 300,000 barrels of oil a day, but output will be a fraction of that in the coming days. Still, the additional production has influenced oil prices, which fell Monday. The group of major oil-producing countries have struggled to get its members to observe production limits to drive prices up. Libya, an OPEC member, is currently governed by rival groups in Tripoli and by the eastern part of the country. An opposition lawmaker was arrested today while returning to Zimbabwe, becoming the latest legislator to be detained since anti-government protests in January turned violent. The crackdown on protesters and organizers has also targeted people from civic society. Reporter Kudzai Zanawashi has more details.
Joanna Mamombe was arrested over the weekend and charged with subverting a constitutionally elected government. Today, she was denied bail and remanded in custody till Saturday. Fellow opposition legislator Charlton Wende was arrested today. Jacob Mafume, the opposition MDC spokesperson, confirmed the arrest.
Yes, he was arrested today. He is still at the Harare Law and Order. He suspects that he's going to be charged with subversion or treason.
This is happening against a background where government has called for dialogue with political parties to map a way forward. But the main opposition and other opposition parties have refused, saying the dialogue was not genuine and the political environment was hostile. Mafume says the arrests are a ploy to force the opposition into dialogue, but they will not give in.
We will not give in to murder, give in to extortion, give in to blackmail. We will not give in to a military state.
Munyara Dzidodo is the editor of Open Parli, an online publication that covers parliament business and political developments. He says the arrest will worsen Zimbabwe's crisis.
You remember in 2017 the case of Martha O'Donovan, Ivan Mawarire, Promise Mkwananzi, Linda Masarira. All these people have been brought before the courts under the same pretext, and none of their charges ever stuck. It's unfortunate that the Zimbabwean government continues to use the court system.
Dodo says the arrest of legislators will slow parliament processes and that the renewed U.S. sanctions on Zimbabwe are very telling.
With the recent U.S. extended sanctions for another year, just shows that we're now firmly back where we were in early 2017. The sanctions will continue to stay. If you read the report by former U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe, Bruce Wharton, on Zimbabwe, the U.S. stance on Zimbabwe will remain like this because the government has not shown any signs of reform.
Dodo says nothing has changed in Zimbabwe since the strongman Robert Mugabe era. He adds that the opposition crackdown could be an effort by the government to water down any possibilities of more nationwide protests. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
And in more news from Zimbabwe, Botswana has extended a credit facility to Zimbabwe as part of a renewed effort to elevate their bilateral ties in key strategic areas. Leaders of the two nations signed several agreements at the inaugural ceremony of the Zimbabwe-Botswana Binational Commission in Harare. Adigando has the story.
Zimbabwe needs more than US$10 billion for economic recovery, but the country's low credit rating and policy inconsistency make it hard to secure credit. Last Thursday, Botswana President Mokgweetsi Masisi and his team of ministers signed six agreements with their Zimbabwe counterparts for a credit facility of up to US$95 million. The money will come from private financial institutions that will extend credit to Zimbabwean private sector businesses. The two governments will guarantee the loans. Botswana's economy is highly dependent on diamonds. Observers say it is seeking to diversify through industrialization. At the end of the summit, Minister of Foreign Affairs in Zimbabwe, Mr. Sibusiso Moyo, read a statement.
The two presidents noted the need to increase volumes of trade and investment between their countries. In this regard, they directed that a business forum be convened on the margins of the Zimbabwe International Trade Fair to be held in Bulawayo in April 2019. The two presidents welcomed Botswana's decision to consider joining the CASA Univisa system, as this will assist in the promotion of tourism among the countries involved.
The Kavango Zambezi Univisa costs US$50 and allows tourists to obtain one visa to visit Zambia and Zimbabwe multiple times. The visa is valid up to 30 days as long as the holder remains within the two countries. the Binational Commission saw a total of 6 agreements being signed, including an extradition treaty between the two countries, which experienced large numbers of its citizens crossing into each other's countries. The Botswana president speaks on the agreements.
Reflecting on some of the commitments we made during this session, I am pleased to note that the signing of the extradition treaty will ensure that we facilitate the serving of justice for our people. It will also assist in fighting cross-border crime.
The binational agreement is expected to enhance trade within the two countries and setting up a link with Mozambique.
Our commitments, such as the Ponto Tocha Benini project, which will result in the establishment of an international trade route linking Botswana and Zimbabwe to the eastern markets through Mozambique, need to be fast-tracked.
The Ponta Tekubanin Railway Project would link the three countries. Relations between Zimbabwe and Botswana have improved recently with new presidents in both countries. Industry players such as the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries' recent past president, Sifela Nijabangwe, sees cooperation between the two countries as being long overdue.
We should have had a relationship right from the start with Botswana because we share a border and we share common interests, which are basically that Botswana intends to expand and diversify its economy from diamonds, and Zimbabwe, and they've got the money to invest. Zimbabwe is looking for investment, and it's got the diversified industries which can expand into the rest of Africa and also can even expand globally, as we've seen by companies like what companies like Equinet have done, what companies like Citgo are doing in the region.
Observers say that despite the spin by state media in Zimbabwe, the reality on the ground is that Botswana is looking out for its own interests. The Botswana president has been at pains to explain that the credit facility is not coming from the coffers of Botswana's government, contrary to initial reports in state media. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
Seventeen past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Sudanese officials have released a top opposition leader who had been held since December. Omar El Digiri is the head of the opposition Sudanese Congress Party. He was arrested and jailed days after protests that broke out a government decision to raise the price of bread by 200%. The protests then spread across the country and grew into a movement against the longtime rule of President Omar al-Bashir. Sudanese officials have launched a crackdown in an effort to limit the protests. The Sudanese Congress Party confirmed the release of its leader, but said 40 other party leaders are still in detention. Sudanese demonstrators continue to call for Bashir to leave office. Opposition activists say thousands of people observed a one-day strike today demanding that Bashir step down. The Sudanese Professionals Association, a group of several professional unions, called for today's strike. Liberian authorities have arrested and jailed one of former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's sons, Charles Sirleaf, and two other Central Bank of Liberia, CBL, officials for their alleged involvement in what authorities are calling criminal conspiracy, economic sabotage, and illegal disbursement and expenditure of public money. The arrests come barely a week after two investigative bodies looking into the alleged missing $16 billion at the CBL released two concurrent reports. One, commissioned by the U.S. Embassy in Monrovia, identifies systemic and procedural weaknesses at the CBL and shortcomings in Liberia's fiscal and monetary management processes. Journalist Betty Johnson Mbaye is senior reporter for Liberia's Front Page Africa newspaper. She says there are also calls for the arrest of Finance and Development Planning Minister Samuel Tiwea. The Rwandan government has denied reports that it deployed more troops on its border with Uganda amid bilateral tensions. But the foreign minister says the government continues to recommend that Rwandans not travel to Uganda because of security concerns. Eugene Uwimana has more from Rwanda's capital, Kigali.
Since the Rwandan government last week warned citizens not to travel to Uganda, Ugandans and some domestic critics say the number of soldiers patrolling the border has increased dramatically. Rwandan Foreign Affairs Minister Richard Sezibera today dismissed that concern.
There are no additional troop deployments on our borders. Our country is well defended, and there is no need to do anything extra.
Minister Sezibera also denied claims that Rwandan's borders to Uganda are closed, but he says Rwandans still are advised not to travel to Uganda.
No, Gatuna is not closed. It will not be closed. None of Rwanda's borders are closed. Yeah? Rwandans are strongly advised not to cross into Uganda, not to go to Uganda.
There have been reports for several days that traffic at most border crossings has been shut down from the Rwandan side with no clear explanation from Kigali. Since in 2016, when already the prickly relationship between Uganda and Rwanda relations grew tense, many projects of the East African community have been stunted, especially those involving both countries. Rwanda is a landlocked country that relies on Tanzania's Dar es Salaam port and also Kenya's Mombasa port, which is reached via Uganda. Sezibera says the diplomatic tensions create a challenge for Rwanda's exports.
But you see, you cannot have free movement of goods without free movement of people. It's a problem. You cannot say, let the goods move, but I will arrest those who are transporting those goods.
Rwanda accuses Ugandan authorities of abducting and illegally detaining Rwandans in Uganda and harboring forces who seek to destabilize Rwanda. On Tuesday, Uganda's Foreign Minister Sam Kutesa issued a public letter denying those accusations. Some Ugandans claim that relatives who work in Rwanda are harassed by officials there. Ugandan Parliament member Pius Wakabi urges leaders to quickly sort out the matter.
Are losing jobs in Rwanda. Slowly, they say, your contract is over, just abruptly like that. I think there is need for Parliament of Uganda to look into this matter.
Since tensions began to chill, President Paul Kagame of Rwanda and Yoweri Museveni of Uganda have met, but their talks have made no progress. The two countries share languages, and many families have members living across the border. Students and workers from both countries have routinely crossed the border for jobs and school until traffic at main border crossings started last week. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
A Tanzanian woman is traveling around Africa, showcasing her soccer ball juggling skills as a way to feed her family. Her video clips have gone viral on social media and captivated the hearts of many people in the continent and beyond. This month, one of her clips caught the eyes of U.S. President Donald Trump, who tweeted, "Amazing." Lamek Masina caught up with her in the Malawi capital, Lilongwe, and filed this report.
Hadara Charles Njeje started honing her ball juggling skills when she was a teenager in Tanzania playing for a local women's football team. She maneuvers the ball with her feet, head, chest, and shoulders. For the past 6 years, Njeje, a single mother of two sons, has been using the skills to raise money to feed her family.
Yani, hii kazi.
She says this helps her paying school fees for her two children, buying food to feed her family, and also paying for household bills and other needs. She has so far traveled to several African countries, including Cameroon, Burundi, Gabon, and recently Malawi. She charges $4 for a two-minute performance and earns between $45 and $50 a day. She dismisses accusations of using black magic to develop her skills. There is no magic in this bowl, she says. This is my own talent I started developing long ago. In Malawi, her skills captivated national women's football officials who thought of bringing her into their women's soccer development program, but she declined the offer. Suzy Ongwira is the chairperson of Women's Football Committee in Central Malawi.
If she was ready to impart the skills with others, I think we would explore all the other options. I would liaise with the teams and see how best we can utilize her talent to impact, especially the youngsters who are just starting.
Her skills have also dazzled male footballers. Samuel Zeka plays social football in the capital, Lilongwe. He says this is a rare talent for a woman to juggle the ball as this lady is doing. I would be very grateful if she would teach me such skills, he added. Her video filmed in Malawi also caught the eye of the President Donald Trump. JJ, who is 29 years old, says she wished the American president could have done more than tweeting his amazement. She says she wished he helped her feed her family. She has two children and elderly parents. They all rely on her help. She wished Trump helped boost her talent so that she can be known across the world and earn more money. But after Trump's tweet, JJ received various requests for interviews from local and international media organizations like the BBC and Reuters. She returned to Tanzania last week after an agent who came to Malawi from Zimbabwe convinced her of a possible lucrative advertising contract in Spain. JJ told VOA she hopes the new contract marks the beginning of her better life. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Tomas Blondet, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we are celebrating the accomplishments of women on the continent. This year's United Nations theme is Think Equal, Build Smart, Innovate for Change. An in-depth discussion on the path to gender equality on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.